Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, Daddy-O. Some cats and I are gonna go cruise the strip in our screamers tonight. Maybe meet up with some babies. You hep?
Sorry. I need to wash my hair.
Aw, don't be such a wet rag. All right, we're back with part two today, Patrick, of our interview with J.D. McPherson. I met up with J.D. backstage at the Black Cat in Washington, D.C. That's why you might hear some noise in the background a little bit, but not too bad. I think it's a pretty good sounding interview. But just so people know, you know, when you do these interviews, sometimes you're just in like a dressing room, and at the Black Cat, you know, the dressing rooms are what they are, but they just have like a curtain.
That goes across.
Mm-hmm. So anybody who's doing anything out in the hall, you can hear it in there.
Might hear somebody getting thrown down the stairs or something like that. Yeah.
There's some of that. But it also, you know, it's part of the atmosphere. It's part of rock and roll, right?
Yeah.
Being backstage.
And that was great yesterday, Jim. I want to thank you on behalf of myself and our audience for doing this, because that was really interesting.
It was fun. It's such a nice guy. And I'm waiting on that 45. So on today's episode, we're going to talk with J.D. McPherson more about Mostly about this newest record.
Cool.
And sort of, you know, how he actually got discovered and, you know, made a career out of music after being fired as a middle school teacher. So let's get into that.
Roll tape.
As we do that, let me play this song here from the new album, Undivided Heart and Soul. So one of the things about this new record is it does have some different textures, and it goes away from, you know, just, you know, the rockabilly, the roots rock, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And one point later in this interview, I tried to make a point about a song having vibraphone on it and it being sort of a prominent part of the song, but I screwed up in the interview and I cited the wrong song.
Oh.
But yet he just sort of was a good guy and he just kind of talked about that song anyway.
Okay.
However, let me play the one that I meant to mention, which is called Style is a Losing Game. And it's similar to the one that we talk about later in that it has kind of a new wave quality to it.
Okay,
so we'll hear that, a little clip of that, and then we'll go right into the interview.
Great.
Okay, so let's talk about the first couple of records before we get to the new one. So you started with, you know, very roots-based sort of sound. What was the initial reaction? What kind of crowd were you attracting to your music?
The first, the third show we played was in Spain at a rock and roll festival.
Okay.
And Europe latched on immediately. You know, I don't know if you know, but there's this whole subculture of people that's all they want is stuff that looks, sounds, and seems like 50s rock and roll.
Right.
And, honestly, they were the first and loudest champions of it. And a lot of those folks are in Europe. And so we went over there a lot. I will say, for the most part, even as things get, that first record sound sonically is, you know, exactly what I always wanted to make, which was something that sounded like early rock and roll,
right,
not just the chords and stuff are the same. Because to me, the sonics of something are as much of a language as the lyrics or the structure or the arrangements or the instrumentation.
Totally.
The example I always use is that if you heard Move It On Over by Hank Williams recorded in the 80s, like a Randy Travis type production, it would not be the same. It wouldn't have that sort of mid-rangey vocals way up front, band in the back of the room, one microphone thing. It's right. it's a language. And so I always wanted to make a record like that. That sounded like a proper old R&B
record.
Some
slapback and you got, you know, there's
the highs rolled off and a little bit of grit on everything. And luckily the engineer was really good at that and we were able to pull it off. But I will say that as traditional of in the approach of that record, for that crowd, there is some weird stuff to try to digest on that record. There's some weird themes and I'm 12 years of art school, so there's just going to be a weirdness to some things that I do. But for the most part, as things get more and more left of center in that regard, they've also been very open mind about it. So,
So that's what I want to get to, because when you're doing music that sort of reflects a different era, is there a danger that you become, you know, like a novelty act?
Well, I mean, there's absolutely that danger, and it happens all the time. Bands come out all the time that do a soul record or something, and you can smell it. This is popular right now, so let's do a neo soul record. I don't want to knock that. That's fine. People are really getting a lot of happiness out of that. But I mean, you can tell. But to me, it wasn't ever about let's make a record that sounds like this. It was like, I love rock and roll music, and this is part of it. You know, it's like when you see a goth at the mall, you're like, yes, the kid's flying the flag, you know? So like, to me, it was always just about like, you know, I want to make rock and roll music all the time. It's all I want to do. And I think maybe somehow that comes across a little bit different than somebody that just like wants to, Christina Aguilera wants to make a crooner record.
Right.
Or something.
No, I think it comes from a real place, a true, honest place for you, from you as the performer. I guess, though, the question would be, does everybody see it that way? Or do you become sort of pigeonholed and you attract a certain, you know, crowd that's
it's
only into that?
Absolutely.
You know,
I mean, there's definitely been folks that are just like, you've already done, this has already happened, why are you doing it again? But to me, it's like jazz or blues, like it's an American tradition, and our brains are hardwired to understand 1-4-5 chord progressions, and you know, it's youth culture, it's all that stuff. It's it's all I think about. I don't hear where I go, let the sky open up and let the good times roll.
But it seems like on the new record, Undivided Heart and Soul, that you're going in some different directions now. So was that a conscious effort? Was it just a natural progression?
To me, it's two things. The songwriting, I'm learning more in expanding the songwriting more. So that's leading the songs in recordings into different areas. And the other one is that it's still a rock and roll record, but during that time, I found myself listening to a lot more kind of raggedy, garagey stuff.
Yes.
And I actually, just a couple of things were like a magnet pulling me towards this sort of sound. I bought a guitar in Austin, Texas that was like a 61 Supro Dual Tone, which is the Link Ray guitar.
Oh, okay.
And you can imagine what happened next. Everything I wanted to do was glang, glang, you know.
Right.
And Mark Neal on the second record introduced us to fuzz bass and fuzz baritone guitar stabs. So that's almost like become a part of what we do now. This sounds strange. Have you read that David Byrne book, How Music Works?
Mm-mm.
He's talking about how the venue is appropriate for certain kinds of music, and how the venue is just another part of music.
Okay.
And how certain venues are appropriate to certain things and some aren't to others, and you can mix and match and play with those ideas. It kind of occurred to me that, like, as the years go by and we start the venues start to get maybe a little bigger, it's just harder sometimes to get those sounds to be right. And I don't know, maybe subconsciously that's leading you to louder sounds, yeah, or bigger moves or broader brushstrokes. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm thinking about that lately.
Okay. Okay. So I can definitely hear on Lucky Penny, like, there's definitely some different, you know, sonic elements to that song, little parts in there that, you know, people would say, well, that sounds like alternative rock.
Penny's been nothing but bad luck.
Bad luck. Yeah. You know. Well, I know. And there's been a few bands that have done. I think what the thing about it is, the missing link there is that all those bands are listening to the same records. I just remember we were in the studio and we were trying to like figure out. Because I started with that riff, the da 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 da, but it was clean and it was just a blues riff, mm-hmm, you know. It was just something I would do in between songs, and nobody ever thought much about it. And then I turned a fuzz pedal on that Jim Dunlop gave me, and that's a thing, you know. And then we messed around with different ideas. I remember we were listening to Harry Nilsson, Jumping the Fire, and the bass was really based on that, and like kind of sliding up and down. And then the vibraphone at RCA Studio B, we couldn't stop using that on everything. And it just kind of came together that way. But yeah, that's, to me, it is a natural progression, but some people are like, whoa, what is happening here? It's a big leap.
That vibraphone, yeah, it's subtle in that song, but on a song like On the Lips, it, mm-hmm, seems to come through more, and it gives it almost kind of a new wave quality, yeah, I think.
Well, I love new wave music, yeah, okay, man. I really do. One of the first bands I really adored was the Pixies.
Yeah.
And the Pixies had such a strong surf element to them. And I just remember getting the Pixies and being like, wow, they like surf music, you know? And like almost every record had an instrumental on it.
Yeah, like Cecilia Ann.
Yeah. It was just such a cool idea. Not a lot of people talk about that about the Pixies. Yeah. They always talk about the reversed loud chorus and quiet verse thing.
Because somebody else made that a big...
Yeah.
Right.
But there's so many great things about them.
Yeah.
Acoustics in like a loud rock song. That was a really cool thing too. Mm-hmm. But I would say On the Lips is as much a love letter to like the Pixies and the Ventures as it is to the Cars.
Yeah.
Because all that stuff is in there, you know?
And I was thinking about this too. a casual music fan might think, like, well, there's really nothing similar between, you know, roots rock and new wave. Those seem so different. But really, like, I remember, you know, going back to the late 70s, early 80s, there were a bunch of bands like Rock Pile and later on, like, the Blasters and stuff like that. And they were sort of lumped into the new wave.
Rock Pile,
you know, at the time,
is a huge influence on this new record. Huge.
Seconds of Pleasure Blasters, is one of the greatest albums
course,
ever.
Absolutely. And the Blasters is one of my all-time favorite bands. Phil Alvin is one of the best singers that ever walked the earth. I was going to say, though, speaking of the Cars, if you listen to the guitar solo on My Best Friend's Girl, I mean, that might as well be on a Carl Perkins record.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Elliot Easton's amazing.
Totally.
He? Yeah. Underrated guitarist. Okay, let's take a little break here from the interview.
Sounds
and we'll
good.
Come back and we'll hear more from JD McPherson. So, Patrick, during this break,
yeah,
I think we want to let people know that we have this cool website, right?
Yeah.
It's called suburbspod.com.
Yeah.
We have somebody who helps us put it together.
We do.
Right? And that keeps the engine, you know, running, right? And there people can listen to the show if you want to listen to it there, or you can find a little articles about each episode, and there's some other kind of separate articles, things like that. I know you're working on something right now that you're pretty excited about.
Yeah,
so.
I'm pretty excited. I'm working on it. And one thing I love about it is the song list, where you can just go and see all the songs we played on Suburbs Pod, which is really fun. It's actually becoming a good reference tool for ourselves. Like, have we ever played this band before?
Yeah, I forget often.
Yeah, so it's great.
Yes.
I mean, we've got like 2,000 episodes we've recorded, or 200.
Yeah,
but
about
it's,
that.
There's a lot to listen to out there. Yeah, I was surprised the other day how many Beatles songs we've played on this show.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I need to go back and check
Take
that
a look.
Out. All right, I will do that.
Go to the song list at suburbspod.com.
I'm going there right now.
All right.
All right, let's hear the last part of the interview with J.D. McPherson.
This guy's really interesting.
Here he gets into some of his slower songs that he does. So another thing that he's really sort of taken on lately is doing some kind of more like soul singing, you know?
Oh.
And even to the point where really you hear almost like a different vocal approach that he does. So we'll play into this part of the interview with one of his more soulful songs. It is called Hunting for Sugar.
Don't pass my doorstep if you're hunting for sugar.
One thing I noticed is that when you do the, you know, when you do the faster stuff and you can really sort of growl out the vocals, when you do a slower song and a more soulful song, you really sort of change your whole vocal style and delivery. Does that just come natural to you as a singer, or is that something you had to work on? And how do you feel?
I think,
you know,
it
with those
sort of
styles?
Depends. I didn't mean to cut you off there. I'm sorry. I think it sort of just depends on the song. Whatever seems appropriate, I guess, for the song.
Yeah.
I don't know if this just occurred to me. I don't know if this is really related, but I was recently thinking about singers that actually really change their voice on records. I was thinking about Paul McCartney. Paul McCartney has like three or four distinct voices that he uses. David Bowie is like started off with this kind of shrieky thing, and then he ends up with this like deep crooner.
That's right.
Thing. Prince had all these like voices that he would do. So I don't know. I was kind of maybe fascinated by that.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
The Lady Madonna, Paul McCartney versus the him covering Little Richard is maybe the best example.
Or like I'm Down, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Where he just, man, he shreds his voice. It's great.
Yeah.
Going back to like growing up loving rock and roll, what does it feel like to you when you do, you know, kind of a slower song and you're kind of putting yourself out there? I imagine, does it require a certain amount of kind of vulnerability to sing a song like that? And as opposed to, you know, the fast, like kind of rocker, which has probably a totally different feeling emotionally, right?
Yeah. And also because I'll be honest, I don't really like the sound of my own voice. Oh. Like I don't really like listening to the records once they're made. Like it's, I agonize over that because I'm never really super happy with the vocals on there. So it's kind of a uncomfortable job every time I have to do it anyway. But I love 12-8 ballads.
Okay.
Like two of my youngest daughter always asks me, what's your favorite song? Because she's always waiting for me to say her favorite song, which is Dangerous Woman by Ariana Grande. She always wants me to say that.
Right.
But I always say my two favorite songs are In My Room by the Beach Boys and Love Letters by Keddie Lester. So I love really like kind of saccharine ballads. And Irma Thomas is like one of my favorite singers. And so she's a big influence. Those records are a big influence on the slow things.
Right.
But I love doing those. In fact, I think maybe Hunting for Sugar may be my favorite recording. Not my favorite song, but that's my favorite piece of music that this band has recorded. And it's a slow one.
Yeah, no, you guys sound great.
Thanks.
You guys sound great. Thank you. Well, we ran over time here a little bit, but thanks very much for your time.
Oh, that flew by.
Yeah.
Wow, thanks, man.
Don't pass my doorstep if you're hunting for sugar.
All right. I want to thank J.D. McPherson for spending some time with me.
What a cool dude, man. He seemed really, really interesting.
It was great, man.
Yeah.
It was great. If you want to see J.D. on his tour, you can go to jdmcpherson.com and you can see all the tour dates there. And he has dates all the way through February 4th. It looks like he's really booked through middle of December, and then there's a bit of a gap. And then he has a show in New Orleans on February 4th. But there's a lot of opportunities still to go see him.
Great.
Your daughter might like to know, Patrick, that he'll be playing in Wilmington, North Carolina on December 7th.
Wow. You know, it's interesting. I can't think of a band that would be farther away from the kind of music she likes. But maybe I'll make a reason to be down there and visit her on December 7th.
There you go.
Yeah.
There's that. My friend's in Louisville. He'll be at Headliners on November 17th.
Cool.
So there's lots of opportunities. Check it out. And also, you can hear all of JD's stuff on, you know, the streaming services, that kind of thing. But as he mentioned, he sells a fair amount of physical product. So, find his records wherever records are sold. I think you'll really enjoy them. So, all right. And with that, I want to tease that tomorrow I have an interview with Nicole Atkins. She is a singer who's on tour with JD as a supporting act, and she's really great, and she took a little bit of time out to also sit down and chat, and so you're going to hear that interview tomorrow.
Let me get this straight, Jim, just so I have it in my mind. Over the past 24 hours, you went to see two acts, interviewed them both, woke up, ran a 10K, and transcribed some of the interviews while all I did was sit around and eat Halloween candy. That's pretty much what happened. Yeah.
I didn't want to come
right
out and
watch soccer.
Say it.
Yeah. That's all I did.
Okay.
Just so you know how it goes around here, folks.
I am very tired. I think the listeners can hear it in my voice. More coffee, please.
Yeah.
That. Okay. All right. So that's it check that out. Nicole Atkins tomorrow. Please listen to Rock in the Suburbs
every day.
So that includes tomorrow. Yep. You can find it on all the big podcast platforms. Please tell your friends. We really would appreciate that. And also, mm-hmm. we don't mention this enough. If you can, please rate and review the show on iTunes. That is really huge for us.
Please.
You can also visit our website, suburbspod.com. You can find us on social media at suburbspod. You can email us, rock@suburbspod.com.
Mm-hmm.
And or you can call the Suburban Party Line. We would love for you to leave a message. Get on an upcoming Fan Mail Friday or something like that. The number is 612-440-1984.
Become your own at Echo Park, Jimmy.
Maybe. I don't know.
Well,
maybe. That's kind of, you know, let's see.
The
let's
bar is pretty high.
People
yeah.
do with that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's get out of here.
Okay.
I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Let the sky open up, little darling.
It's like a cross between Irma Thomas and Radiohead.